Now, food obviously is a central component. The food is important. The food we eat can be the safest and most powerful form of medicine or the slowest form of poison. I recognize that the caveat at the beginning of our conversation, I told you about my dad, and my dad was a healthy guy, relatively, in terms of society. They would say he ate pretty well. He was moderate. He didn't really eat much meat. He never drank. He never smoked. He liked his sweets. Everyone would say he was pretty moderate. I'll tell you, this is what resonated, that moderation can kill. We never know what the impact is on our bodies from even the smallest dose of poison versus the largest dose. So it's better suited to make sure we're adhering to as many green foods as possible. Green light foods, not red light foods that are going to definitely cause harm, not yellow light foods, as I taught my kids how to drive. We have to make sure we have to feed our body to fight stress. We have to feed our body with the resiliency it needs because our health equals resiliency over stress. That studies have shown that compared to individuals who hardly consumed any fruits and vegetables, or those who consumed 3 to 4 servings were 12% less likely to experience stress or perceive stress. And those who consumed 5 to 7 servings per day were 14% less likely to perceive stress than those who had 0 to 4. There's power in our lifestyle. Yes, was it directly from the fruits and vegetables? I like to say, I think there's a mechanism of how that can happen, but we don't know for sure if it was causation or correlation. But as we add on things, we start to realize there's power that's there, that the seeds and nuts, I don't mean butter toffee peanuts, I don't mean roasted and all these other things. I mean raw seeds and nuts that are measured small amounts, less than 2 or 3 tablespoons a day, right? That what studies have shown, it's a powerhouse of nutrition and can greatly improve your mental health. Decreasing that stress burden is what we're talking about. Pumpkin seeds are rich in zinc. Walnuts are rich in omega-3s, and it helps our memory and brain function. That when we look overall, that researchers have found that eating blueberries, I have a whole big canister of blueberries and raspberries, strawberries, and blackberries right now I've been feeding on. It helps reduce the genetic and biochemical drivers of depression and suicidal ideation associated with post-traumatic stress disorder. So we need to make sure we recognize, are we feeding our body? Are we adding to our resiliency or adding to our stress? The studies have told us that turmeric, curcumin, especially it's activated with the mixture of black pepper, that it's effective in its own in combination with another herb, saffron, in decreasing stress, depression symptoms. This is powerful. This was identified, especially inside of women. The study was done primarily there. Around the perimenopausal, excuse me, premenstrual period of time too, as well. That studies have shown too, as additionally, consumption of dark chocolate, small amounts, postage stamp size, may be able to help decrease perceived stress. Now, we all probably can get on board with a little bit of dark chocolate, right? Also, probiotics. Look at kimchi and various aspects here, decreasing the stress in healthy volunteers. It may alleviate stress-related sub-threshold anxiety and depression levels. But we also know we have to use nutritional resiliency to heal our broken heart. Studies have told us that when we engage in green leafy vegetables, and so this means our spinach and bok choy and Swiss chard and mustards and collards, that we are decreasing at least 1 cup a day. That's not much. Of this vegetable, nitrates, dietary nitrates, it lowers our risk for ischemic heart disease, heart failure, and stroke, peripheral arterial disease by 15, excuse me, 12, 15, 17, and 26%. That's astronomical. One of the benefits that have been identified is that there is a component of vitamin K2, which may be able to help decrease some of that atherosclerosis or coronary calcification. More work is being done inside that area there. But these studies have shown substantially, other studies have told us about decreasing the risk and burden of blood pressure and subsequently lowering the risk of heart disease, as I mentioned, up to 26%. Beets are a powerhouse. They help our endothelium. They help our blood flow that's there. Studies have shown. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't care for beets, but we know after several weeks, your taste buds start to shift. I like beets now. And before, when I didn't, what I did was I bought frozen beets or I cut them up and frozen and put inside my smoothies. That this helps with the blood pressure. It helps with the endothelium and lowering the blood pressure by nearly 8/5 millimeters of mercury, which is substantial, as we know that each 1 millimeter of mercury can decrease your burden and future risk of cardiovascular disease by 15 to 20%. What about whole grains? Whole grains, I don't mean the labels that are written as whole grains, the stuff that you have to chew. Your jaw gets tired when you're having it. That Ezekiel 4:9 bread, that each serving can decrease overall mortality. It can decrease your cardiovascular mortality by 9%, is what studies have told us, primarily of nurses' health study. And so these things are powerful. That's there. They also diversify your gut microbiome as well. That when we look at these components of plant-rich foods, fiber-rich foods, of soy and legumes and so forth, that studies have shown as it relates to our cholesterol, that lowers our burden of cholesterol, our bad cholesterol, markers of inflammation that are there astronomically in comparison, comparable to some low-dose statin therapies. This is wonderful work that was done by David Jenkins and reported years ago that we see once again validating the power to heal a broken heart in its risk factors. That eating our beans and legumes. I had someone yesterday say, "I don't like beans." I said, "You're an adult. What do you mean you don't like? You have to keep trying it at least 2-3 times in different ways until your body can get acclimated to it." So whether or not it's split peas, whether or not it's lentils, red beans, black beans, the studies have told us that 4 times or more per week with less than compared to one, less once a week was associated with a 22% lower risk of coronary heart disease and 11% of vascular disease. We talked about nuts as it relates to mental health, but also we know that there is once again multiple. We look at the size of this. Nearly 500, 467,000 individuals, the highest versus lowest nut consumption decreased the risk of overall mortality and cardiovascular mortality or death. So once again, I'm not talking about snacking. I'm a snackaholic. I'm a recovering snackaholic. I can kill a bag of whatever of nuts. I don't do that. I'm sprinkling no more than a couple of tablespoons of raw seeds or nuts on various aspects that are there. Spice is the thing of life. We want to get away from the salt. Increase our spices, not just curcumin, but the multitude of spices. It helps in terms of with our combat oxidation too as well. It's rich in antioxidants. It helps improve triglyceride compensation, excuse me, concentrations as well. Powerful, that's there. When we look at the components, the other components of a deep, enriched, diverse plant-rich diet, we understand that this adherence is lower overall burden of cardiovascular events. We're trying to add to it as we add the onions and the allium family that helps decrease the platelet adherence, onions and garlic. That's what they do and help improve the enrichment. The celery, which acts as a natural diuretic, that's there. We're getting the bell pepper, which is giving you vitamins. We're getting the potatoes, which is giving you protein and nutrients. Not the potatoes with all the cheese and the bacon and everything of that sort. We're staying away from that. The green leafy vegetables that are giving you dietary nitrates. That's where the power lies, using our food as medicine. That's where it becomes important in medicine as our foods. The I in selfish stands for intimacy. Charles Caleb Colton said, "True friendship is like sound health. The value of it is seldom known until it is lost." Wonderful work that's being done. University of Brigham Young University, Julianne Holt Lundstad. She compared the effects of loneliness, isolation, sounds like the COVID pandemic. It's comparable to smoking 16 cigarettes a day. This is why the Surgeon General said that loneliness is a public health risk. We understand that when we engage in healthy relationships, not toxic relationships, it can decrease our perceived stress and this appraisal process as well and promote a positive affect. My parents said as a kid growing up, Columbus, guard who you are friends with. They say birds of a feather flock together, and they're so right that right now, through the work here, this group, you're creating a small microcosm of a community that's here, that hopefully you will see it go forward. And this community allows you to encourage each other towards this improved state of health, of understanding the power of your choices of things that you do that are adding to your resiliency or adding to your stress. Your friends are your family that you choose. But it's not just our friends, our human ones. It's how about our animal family? How about our sentient beings that we have here too as well, that research have observed this consistent pattern of higher amounts of hormone oxytocin, this bonding, this lowering, this anti-stress hormone, and lower amounts of stress hormone cortisol in those who interact with their social support animals. So I'll tell you, my mom lives with me. I don't live with my mom, right? I don't live with my mom. My mom lives with me. At age 89, I can say it because she's a beautiful woman, right? And she'll be 89 this upcoming June. And so she has 5 kids. I have siblings. I'm the pleasant surprise, the youngest. And my daughter one time said, she calls her Jaja. "Jaja, who's your favorite?" kind of smirking at me, thinking like, oh, she's going to say you dad or whatever. And she said, Precious. Well, I don't have a sibling named Precious. You know what Precious is? Precious is her dog. And guess what Precious does? Precious knows when my mom's sad. She knows if my mom's having a little bit of arthritic pain. She understands all that, that she is her support. They communicate with each other. I recently read research that the intonations of animals as they're barking, that scientists have uncovered, that there is humor that's there. It's playful, certain tones that are there, that they have certain aspects, and that we know when Precious, my mom communicates with Precious, knows when Precious needs to go out and pee. She knows if Precious is happy, excited, all those things they communicate. There's power that's there. I want to tell you that as an intimacy, as a community, as a society, as Americans, we need to learn from trees. In the words of Peter Wohlleben, he said, all the trees here in every forest that is not too damaged are connected to each other through underground fungal networks, the world wide wood, right? The world wide web, excuse me, that trees share water and nutrients. They share resources through their networks, also allow them to communicate. That means the trees that are damaged or are low and aren't able to receive the nutrients from the sun, the larger trees share it with them, is what studies have shown. We have to begin this process of having intimate relationships that have been reflected throughout the dawn of time. That when we move on to what's the next pillar of selfish? Sleep, rest, vacation, moments of solitude. That Thomas Dekker said, sleep is the golden chain that ties health and our bodies together. And this is indeed true. Sleep is powerful. That how many of you guys have gone to sleep with struggling, wondering about a problem? You wake up and you have the answer. You go to sleep wondering what's going to happen as it pertains to where your keys are, and you all of a sudden you remember where they're at. How many of you have gone to sleep and you haven't gotten sleep and you're stressed and you seem to be more inclined to be stressed the next day? Well, this is what studies have told us, that after adjusting for age, employment status, physical comorbidities, perceived stress was significantly associated with sleep disturbances. That means you have insomnia, you have sleep apnea, you're not able to go, while resilience and social support were associated with a low likelihood of sleep disturbance. The better your sleep, the more resilient you are. That means that sleep adds to your resiliency and sleep can add to your stress. That studies have shown that adults who sleep less than 8 hours, I don't know how many of you guys slept less than 4 hours last night. How many of you guys slept 4 to 6? How many of you guys slept 7 to 9? Right? Studies have told us that adults who sleep fewer than 8 hours a night report higher stress levels that they perceive than those who sleep at least 8 hours. That means that you become like Teflon. It means that everything flows off of you, that you become fluid in those moments. But here's the thing, that sleep also impacts our endothelium, that individuals who slept their 8 hours or more had improved endothelial function compared to those who did not. That those who did not have, who were sleep deprived, have poor endothelial, that lining of the vessel function, which lends itself to disease. This is why we understand distinctly that ischemic heart disease, cancer, stroke, all these causes, right, of mortality were increased with sleeping less than 6 hours. Or actually, on the other end, when you sleep more than 9 hours, that sweet spot like Goldilocks, you tend to do the best. That's here. That this sleep deprivation, it is activating your stress hormone cascade, and it tilts the scale towards disease. That's there. Our sleep, our rest, our vacation, the moments away become so important to nixing it. Right? My wife introduced this to me from a business perspective. This is something out of the Netherlands of Niksen, Niksen. That means the art of doing nothing. That's hard for me, being honest. That's hard for me. It may be hard for you to Niksen and not do anything and allow the body and mind to reset. It becomes important. We do it for our cars, our electric cars. We do it for our phones. They have to charge up. We have to charge our body. Now, Ben Franklin, in a different life, I would have been a history instructor. Love historical figures. And so Benjamin Franklin is once quoted as saying, trouble knocked at the door, but hearing laughter hurried away. That laughter is the substance of life. That humor and joy of life is so important. Studies have told us that the frequency of laughter attenuates the association between stressful events and subsequent stress symptoms. But here's the key. Here's the power. The level of intensity of laughter was not found to have a significant effect. Now, what that means is that even if you chuckle, that was funny, versus you're laughing, literally laughing out loud, They both give you a beneficial effect. They both give you a beneficial effect that when you smile, try this. Try smiling and looking upward and see if you can have negative thoughts. That when you smile, it lowers your blood pressure. As you begin this idea of force, laughter, of joy, of finding joy in things in life, it is extremely helpful. This study looked at, compared to a control group, psychological stress levels and salivary cortisol levels were lower in the humor group. Those who found humor in life who laughed, yet no differences were found in response time accuracy rates for the visual search task. So this is, they had put folks inside these different groups trying to identify what was going on and their perception of stress, and found stress hormone levels were lower in those who engaged in laughter, who engaged in humor, and found joy in life. That studies have shown that even after adjustment for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, depression, body mass index, and other factors, the prevalence of heart disease among those who never or almost never laugh was nearly 21% times higher than those who reported laughing every day. Have you laughed? It's one of the questions I'd ask my patients. And the stroke rate was nearly 60% higher. Are you finding joy in life? Now, as we wrap things up, one of my roles inside my medical group organization is I'm the medical director for our virtual cardiac rehabilitation program. So cardiac rehab, to some of those of you who are familiar with the work of Dean Ornish and others, is a work that was done there, the Pritikin Institute, of a combination of exercise, stress reduction, nutrition. But so in this research, a very novel research, what they did was they took this group, understanding the power of it for patients who suffered with a heart attack, with stroke, with vascular disease, heart failure. They should be enrolled inside these programs because of the value of the program. But they said, we're going to take individuals in these programs, but to one group, we're going to tell you we want you to laugh for 30 minutes. We don't care how you do it. If it's your raunchiest comedian, if it's your dumbest comedy sitcom comedy show, if it's Three's Company, if it's Saved by the Bell, if it's Big Bang Theory, whatever makes you laugh, you watch it. The other group, they just said, keep doing what you're doing. All the other beneficial effects of cardiac rehab. What they found was a divergence in the outcomes. They found that the individuals who added laughter, humor, joy of life to their rehab sessions every day, they said that were less likely to have chest pain. They found that they were less likely to have recurrent admissions to the hospital with chest discomfort or with shortness of breath. They found that they tended to live longer over the period of time that they observed them. There is power when we engage in humor. And so this is important. So one of the things I want to leave you with today is that you need to go ahead and get selfish. It's your time. You deserve to get selfish. You deserve to live a life of health. You deserve to live a life of purpose. That when you get selfish, the selfish I'm talking about, you're able to live a life of purpose and achieve the things that you need. And so it's been a pleasure presenting this to you here today. And you are now all will get your certificate, right? From Steve and others about what? That you become an honorary cardiologist today. And I want you to become selfish individuals, selfish, so you can live a life of purpose. Thank you. I'll take any questions anyone has now.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Batiste. That was a great presentation. So we're going to begin the Q&A portion of the presentation. And for audience members who would like to ask a question of Dr. Batiste, you can go ahead and raise your hand in chat. The directions for how to do so, excuse me, raise your hand in Zoom. The directions for how to do so are in chat. And we can go ahead and begin with the questions. So first of all, it's a much different perspective than we normally get from cardiologists and people who talk about heart health. You know, you normally, you know, especially in this conference, we hear a lot about food, obviously. So it's great to see the pathophysiology for how stress impacts health. I've heard of things of intentionally inducing stress to the body in order to increase resilience, such as infrared saunas, you know, high heat, as well as cold plunge. How does that play a role in moderating stress and generating overall health?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so one of the things that we look at, even I'll tweak it because I'm not as familiar with that it's been elucidated as quite as well in terms of like cold plunging and infrared sauna, although truth be told, I do both of those. One of the things that we do identify is that in exercise, that this ends up acting more so as a form of stress to our bodies when we engage in exercise. And so that's well recognized that that's stress. But what that's doing is you have to think of those stressor events for these temporary, almost like a training camp, of that's preparing the body to how to respond and getting an understanding in terms of the response process. And so from a physiologic standpoint, it makes us more resilient for these short-term bursts of stress. So when we look at using exercise specifically, we find that the beneficial effects of intense exercise are probably maximally achieved by about 30 minutes. After about 30 minutes or so, you're not really getting the added benefit. And at a certain point, you actually have a decline in terms of the beneficial effects. So these are some of the reasons, and this is part of the reason why we mentioned as we go down the dovetail of exercise for just a moment, of why it's important when we're saying as little as 2 minutes, 10 minutes becomes so exceptionally important in that process of achieving health, why we see health benefits from these small repeated. Now, in terms of like the other aspects that are there in terms of sauna and deep tissue massaging and in terms of the cold plunge, all these things are valuable. And there has been some small studies I've seen as it relates to kind of endothelial function related to some of these too as well.
Great, thank you. And you spoke in your presentation about there being stress coming from not having control or perceived control. And a lot of us, you know, who aren't the bosses in their life, you know, with their job or maybe not even at home.
Tell me about that one.
Yeah, exactly. May be in a position where they don't really have control. And is there a way without changing the circumstances of your life to give yourself more control to undermine the damage being done in having that lack of control?
You know, that's a great question. And so part of one of the things that I've come to realization, recognition is that we all are beholden to someone. What I have control of is my response. I have control of how I choose to respond in a situation. And so let me give you an example for me, because you may say, well, doc, you know, you're in control, you're a doctor, right? Or, hey, you do these leadership roles or whatever else. I remember being inside we'll give you two different scenarios. One scenario, my clinic was double booked, triple booked in a few slots without my approval. I had meetings to go to and everything else. I walked in and I was like stressed. How am I going to, once again, the demands exceeded my perceivable resources. I needed to be in multiple places at once. I was stressed. I didn't have control at that point. Now patients were there, they were waiting. And so in that moment, I was stressed. I started my day very stressed. And for some reason, I stopped and I said, Columbus, all you can do is what you can do. Just what's in front of you. Each moment at that point, I said, I have control of how I'm choosing to respond in this moment. Day is going to happen the way it's going to happen. I'll send my regrets to people if I'm late. I'm going to take care of. And in that moment, my day went much better. Now that's juxtaposed with other days in which I allowed myself to go into this vicious funnel. And I'm snapping at my back office staff and I'm walking in smiling with patients. I walk out, I snap at them. They don't know, you know, so patients don't know, but I'm feeling this mountain hill of stress that my day is horrible. And I feel a tightness in my body. My blood pressure is elevated. And so that's what I mean by control. And that's where the statement that comes in that's so valuable, that life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond. And I'm not tone deaf enough to recognize the fact that travesties and atrocities against human beings that happen, that they have, you can't have that mindset in certain situations when you're being abused or having other things that are there. You absolutely can't. And so I don't want to minimize that and say this is a garden variety solution. This is more for those day-to-day infractions that are not something that are needed or criminal actions where people need to be arrested and everything else. So hopefully that answers a bit.
Sure. And so based on your answer, it seems like you basically changed your perception of the situation. How would you suggest others do the same, whether it be something chronic in their life, like their station in life may not be, you know, full of control, or there's a, you know, there's just a stressful moment where they're going into a presentation, or they're dealing with, you know, they're extremely competent, but they're dealing with too many things to actually handle at one time. How would you recommend people as a practice may change their perception to decrease stress?
Yeah, that's once again another good question. And there's different components to just that question alone that you just asked. So one of the things I oftentimes say in the immediate moment is I try to engage, and this is not something that originated with me, but stop, challenge, and choose. Mm-hmm. I'm really trying to stop myself and figure out and challenge my perception on the external world of what I'm perceiving. And then what am I trying to achieve in terms of the outcome and the response, right? So I'm stopping, I'm challenging my own bias perception of whether or not, if I engage with you, Michael, and I'm like, well, look, Michael's not even looking at me in the eye right now. He must think this is a bunch of baloney that I'm saying right now. I'm all of a sudden I'm making stuff up in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I have to stop. I have to challenge my own self-perception and choose. Either I'm going to ask and say, hey, Mike, you know, Michael, what's going on? How are you doing? Or is this resonating with you? Or what's going on in that particular moment? And I'm choosing right in that moment. That may help to some degree. It may or may not, that if I challenge, because there's so many things that are missed, that we make stuff up, MSU, all the time. We always make stuff up about another individual, groups of people, situations, circumstances is one thing. Other thing that I do for stressful situations is that I try to put pen to paper and write down what I'm doing. I try to be very, and this is one of the things I talk about, the implementation intention for my day, of writing out, what's my plan? What am I doing? Okay, what's the work? If this happens, then what? If this goes wrong, then what? I try and plan, and I'm trying to stage on that implementation intention. The other thing that I am a big advocate of that I speak about in the book is what I call is pre-mortem planning. And I don't call it pre-mortem planning, but the concept of pre-mortem planning. So for those of you unfamiliar with that terminology, in medicine, we have a group of doctors called pathologists, and they perform autopsies after a person dies to try and figure out, well, why they die. We've all watched CSI or some of these other shows that are there. Well, all the work that's being done does nothing to help that person who's dead. They're dead. So the concept is, let's do pre-mortem planning. Let me identify the challenges in my day, the barriers in my day, everything that can go wrong, everything that can go wrong. I'm trying to eat healthfully. I'm trying to plan. I've heard all this wonderful work about the power of nutrition and lifestyle. Now I'm going to plan this out. Now let's figure out, the kids are sick. I can't get to the grocery store. I don't have enough money. They ran out here. What's my plan now? As I have identified all of these challenges, what's my solution? Let's solve for this at this point. So those are some wide scale type scenarios as I'm engaging, and persons engaging in their day-to-day interactions, perhaps in their job and in their situation. Once again, it gets to making stuff up that I may say, hey, my boss, my supervisor, they're always on me. They're always at me. There's just like a very toxic environment. And so the question is, okay, what is it that they really want? Is it that they don't like you, or is it because they're getting beat down by their boss? And they're kicking the can downstream. I mean, what's going on? And what is it that they really need? Let me find out what their needs are. So as I entered into another administrative role, one of the things I told my administrative partner is, let's figure out what our higher ups, what's important to them, is a concept I always took. What's really important to them? Let's make sure we at least give them what they need. That gives us a pass with everything else. Now, don't say that Doc was out there trying to skirt underneath and not get things done, but I tried to understand what the needs were of my higher ups, of what they would be reporting to make sure I took care of that first and they weren't on me. Now, some of my other colleagues, they're like, well, I'm a doctor. No, they don't know. I know. I'm going to do what I do. And they dealt with the repercussions of it. I, taking that approach, allowed me to be able to flourish and have a degree of latitude with that. Now, that doesn't work, and it's hard unless it's an individual, but that's a lot said to kind of give you a perspective on multi-tiered approach.
So you were just talking about thought patterns impacting stress, and I realize that you're a cardiologist, not a mental health expert, but to the best of, but you are talking about stress and thought patterns. In your experience, and perhaps if you know any research, what role does mental health play in contributing to perceived stress?
Oh, that's a continuum that's there. Right. So we understand that depression, anxiety, those are stressful states. And part of that, you're perceiving your external environment of either saying of despair from depression and that and having a sense in this hormonal cascade that ensues. We're seeing from anxiety of like a fear, which is essentially another synonym of fear of particular circumstances, situations of what may happen in the future, that this is all part and parcel together. And so this mental outlook has been identified in Journal of American College of Cardiology in terms of looking at a positive outlook and putting a positive spin and what that does to future cardiovascular health and the events that are there. And that there's power that having a positive outlook in terms of reframing our perspective is helpful. That's not always easy if I have a hormone imbalance. But I think, so this is not to minimize the importance at times of therapy, of cognitive behavioral therapy. It's not to minimize the importance of perhaps of medications when appropriate, but this is to bolster the power of the components of selfish and building resiliency that may be able to help decrease this stress response, the anxiety that's triggered and so forth. And once again, it is. And so give you an example of mindset when practical. So if you were to meet me on a day in, day out basis, I'm more of an introvert than I am an extrovert. I am an extrovert, so to speak, in clinic because that's who I am. I'm Dr. Batiste. I'm not Columbus. When I'm speaking about the power of health, which is my edict of something I have to do, as I described as to the why at the beginning of this, based on my life's experiences, this is not me. This is about wellness. That's just, so it becomes easy for me. I say all that to say is that when we're engaging in these scenarios like this, and we're engaging, it's a mindset shift. And I never forget when I started giving the talks, I didn't want to give talks up front. And I remember kind of going around and looking like, oh, what if I don't say some stuff I want to say, or what if they're critical? I remember at one point, well, I don't want people looking at me. I remember I was in front of a large audience. I remember looking, and in this moment, I caught someone's eye. And they knew I was looking directly at them. And immediately they looked away. I said, I'm up giving a talk, but I'm just note to self. I look over the other direction. I look again inside the audience at someone and they catch their eye. They know I'm looking at them. They look down. I said, none of us want to be seen. None of us want to. I was like, just have fun. Just talk. They may not like what you're saying, but you have to make sure you like what you're saying. You have to make sure it makes sense to you. And so what I'm bringing this example up because that's a mindset shift that as I told my son who's graduating, he said, Dad, I have a lot. This is last night conversation. He said, Dad, I have a lot going on. He's liking this girl. So he told me about this young lady. He's graduating. He said that she told her family about him. I know I'm sharing too much, but he's never going to watch this. And you all better not ever say anything about this to my son if we're in the same spot together. And so he said, you know, she told her family all about me and said, and I think she may have kind of made me out to be too good. And what if I don't live up to it? What if this, that, and the other? And I said, son, I said, just imagine them being anyone else. I said, you know, you're stressed, but this is a natural thing. I said, the recognizing how you feel means it's important to you. That's the first thing. That means it matters. If it didn't matter, you would be careless. But because you have this sense of quote unquote stress, we're labeling it, anxiety, anxious, it matters to you. That means you're normal, you're human. That's first. The second thing is recognize that this means this is your body responding and preparing you to deal with things in life. That means your body is working normally. That's a good thing. That means your body's working the way that it should. This is what you want. I said, now the third thing is recognize that you have control. You just need to be who you are. They're going to see who you are, and that's it. And if who you are is just in that moment, I mean, you want to be the best version of yourself. We all have different versions of ourselves now. Don't get it wrong. But you want to be the best version of yourself in that moment. And guess what? If they don't like you, that's on them. If they like you, great. It does not matter or change the value of who you are as a person. And that's what we have to remember, I believe.
So given the cyclical nature of mental health or even take it away from mental health, just the inclination of most people's thought patterns to go into a negative space, on then on stress, and then on physical health, and then physical health having an impact on how we think, and then, you know, and there's a cyclical nature to this. Where do we begin to break that chain? Where in your experience is the easiest place to get a foothold? Because if someone is down or having negative thoughts, they may not feel like exercising, or the, you know, the bacon double cheeseburger with fries and some alcohol may seem more appealing than you know, the whole food plant-based alternative. Yeah. So in your experience, where have you found the easiest place for people to get a foothold to break that cycle of stress on health and health on stress?
So two components. I'm going to try and remember my trend of thought and address both. I think one, I'll also bring them up both so you know where I'm going. The first one is keystone habits, not a thought that originated with me. And the second one is putting pen to paper. So let's go back to, start with the latter, which is pen to paper. I believe strongly, and this goes back into where I spoke about implementation planning and others, is that I think it's important for us to write down what our goals are, what we're seeking to accomplish, so they're visible and that we see it. That's there. What do we want to accomplish? What do we want to do? What are we trying to get out of life? Not 5-10 years down the road. I mean, but just practically daily. It's like, hey, I want to be able to come on and make sure I'm on time for this presentation today. I want to make sure that all my audio visual works. I want to make sure that that folks aren't coming in, the dog's not barking. Those are some simple things I have kind of down, you know, and so whatever what else is on there for a list, I'm putting pen to paper and how I'm looking to accomplish that. That alleviates quite a deal of stress. And I actually am able to visualize. Now, here's a key. Whether or not you're looking at something like James Clear wrote in Atomic Habits or others have inference, there's so many different wonderful books out there in terms of will, mindset, whether willpower, instinct, of let's start off with something that's easily achievable. So instead of saying, hey, I want to go whole food plant-based and yeah, that bacon double cheeseburger sounds really good, but okay, can I start off with like an improved snack? Or maybe can I have half the burger? Okay, can I have my breakfast to be better? It doesn't have to be all or none. And so starting that process becomes exceptionally important. So I believe planning is a form of a keystone habit. I think, but when we look at keystone habits, those things entail things like, once again, mindfulness, meditation. And people sometimes are turned off by those that concept. They say, you know, I'm not religious. I'm not spiritual. I'm not any of that stuff. And so I'll say, well, you know what? Let's focus on breathing. That, hey, you know what? Just commit to doing something simple in terms of breathing. You know, every day, like as you're kind of starting, that's a very simple way to alleviate stress. But here's what I want you to do that's the added value. I want you to get one of these reward calendars. And I want you to put an X on the day that you accomplish just this simple thing. I'm going to take deep breaths for 30 seconds. Don't say if it's all that doesn't mean anything. I'm going to exercise for 5 minutes. I'm going to go for a walk for 1 minute. Put an X on the calendar for whatever it is. And your goal is not to break the chain. You want the whole entire calendar to line up with X's. And then now as you see this, you're going to see this reward of, I accomplished that. I was able to do that. Now, okay, let me add to that. Maybe I'll see or work on my sleep. Or hey, maybe I'm going to add on components of my nutrition. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm not going to exercise, but guess what I'll do? I'm going to park a little bit further away. I'm going to walk in a little bit further. I'm going to take the stairs if I don't have arthritic issues or whatever it is to my location, still waiting for the escalator or waiting for the elevator, that you're going to make these small gains add up to a lot. And using the concept of compounded interest, 1% gain over the sequence of a year is at over a 33% improvement. That's powerful. Doesn't start off as seeming that way, but that's powerful over the course of a lifetime in terms of changes that you can make. And that's really one of the things that I recommend for that for individuals.
So you mentioned the book by James Clear and Atomic Habits, and I'm familiar with that. It's a great book. Are there other resources or books that you recommend people check out if they want to get more into this type of stuff?
Yeah. So I think Willpower Instinct is a great book too as well. By Kelly McGonigal, The Power of Why is a great book. Of course, I speak to this to a fair amount in my upcoming book, you know, so April 30th is the tentative release date for that one there too as well, that we'll start shipping things out. So there's a wealth of resources. And here's the thing is that many of the books reference other books inside of there. And so from there, that's one of the key, that's the secret. All right, I'm gonna give you a cardiologist tip. Whether or not, so a cardiologist, when we're reviewing journals and articles that we find things that we like, the reference section will have a plethora of resources that led to the authors either composing their research or their review article that we can then tap into and find things additionally. In legitimate books, they're also going to provide not only research, but they're going to provide references to other books that will then kind of feed you into a nice network of things that you can kind of grab hold of. Other book, when you're kind of constructing things, and this one may be more for you, Michael, is Who Not Why is one excuse me, Who Not How is another book that I actually do like here recently. That's one that I've my most recently, I won't say read. My wife always corrects me. I listen to my books just because of time. I listen to my books. And she's like, you don't read your books. I read books. You don't read books. You listen to it. But yeah.
So just what you brought up, your book coming out on April 30th. Do you want to give a shout out to your book and where people can read that book?
Absolutely. So right now it is on drbatiste.com. We have not placed it as of yet on Amazon, although it will be on Amazon available. And so that the release date is April 30th. I just spoke with my publisher. We are on track for that. And I'm excited. And hopefully it's Selfish, a Cure for a Stressed Heart, Stress and Broken Heart. And so really diving in a little bit deeper into some of the things I've given you a high level overview today.